Hey, everybody. Absolutely fantastic episode of the Daily Bone podcast today. We talk about the Blast Gold farming situation and the meme coin rally that's happened in crypto. And then we are joined by a very, 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 very special guest, Ram Ahluwalia, the CEO of Lumida Wealth. He is about to launch a new podcast with Laura Shin on her network with some heavy hitters like Joe McCann and James Seifert from Bloomberg. We talk about everything from the Bitcoin ETFs to what his predictions are for this cycle to Bitcoin dominance versus other assets to, you know, meme coins, even to institutional investing in crypto, all the way to MicroStrategy stock, Coinbase stock. We talk about a lot. So overall, it's a great episode of the show. He even talks a little bit about AI, NVIDIA, and some stocks in that sector. So it's awesome. We always love having him on the show, and it's a great, great episode. It's in partnership with Polygon. So check out Polygon CDK, their aggregation layer, and some of the new items, new products that Polygon has rolling out. Hope you enjoy the show. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday, April 23rd, and welcome to the Daily Bone podcast, where we discuss all things crypto market. This includes the names that you already know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, but of course, meme coins, which apparently are back. I wasn't aware that they really went anywhere, but they're back. And also, of course, the NFT corner of the crypto market. Today, we have a lot to dig into, so we're going to get right into it. We're going to discuss the recent Blast Gold distribution and how to use it to farm your airdrop on Blast. We're going to discuss the recent surge in action in the meme coin sector of the market. And then we're going to be joined by a very, very, very special guest, his second time on the show, Ram Ahluwalia, to discuss all things macro and crypto price action in 2024. Ram is the CEO of Lumida Wealth. He is the CEO and co-founder of Peer IQ, which he got an exit from in 2021. He has extensive experience trading stocks and digital assets. He's an awesome guy. We've gone to dinner with him a few times now. I love hearing his perspective on not only the crypto markets, but also the stock markets. He's a kick-ass guest. We're pumped to have him. Before we kick off today's show, as part of our collaboration with our partners Polygon, easy. We got this Polygon CDK, their aggregation layer. What are we looking at here? How's this stuff being used?
It's rather interesting, to say the least, what it is that they've got going on with it. So, I mean, they're launching an Ethereum layer 2, at least providing support for other organizations to launch this L2. So they've launched what's called a Polygon Chain Development Kit, so a CDK, and it's connected to what's known as their aggregation layer. And it's a ton of different moving parts. We've understood so far that they've been able to create what's also known as a zero-knowledge L2 network, which allows for way more seamless interoperability, allows for scaling of blockchains, and allows for a much more streamlined use case when it comes to user onboarding, where you can actually abstract the user layer, make it significantly more effortless for organizations to spin up a blockchain, which we saw something like OKX do. And it allows for developers from ETH to this new layer to be able to build dApps and other protocols, other applications on it in just a much more streamlined manner. So with that Polygon CDK, it's a toolkit that Polygon's allowed for developers to launch their own L2 on Ethereum or even transition existing layer one chains into L2 solutions. So dropping gas fees, streamlining user onboarding, allowing for just complete interoperability from what they may have already had existing. And then the ag layer, which makes multiple blockchains all be part of a singular instance. So you can actually connect blockchains from different sources. So whether we have the PO blockchain, the Clemente blockchain, the Signal blockchain, the Easy blockchain, we can use the ag layer to combine all of those so that the user has no idea which one they're actually on, but they're all working together across the board. So users don't have to undertake any sort of moving, like much like in a MetaMask where you're clicking and changing between chains. All of that is streamlined into one singular location and there's no need to bridge. So it all just feels like one chain. You can leverage tokens across those different layers, and that's what aggregation is. So Polygon's just doing an excellent job right now, continuing to drive new L2s through their Polygon CDK, and then connecting those L2s through the ag layer. So a complete holistic approach here that lets developers, users, and individuals across the board all be in one single location without having any sort of headaches or interference from jumping around, bridging to chains, using some of the scarier stuff that people tend to shy away from. But Polygon's crushing it.
I love to see it. I love that Polygon is consistently rolling out new functionality, new features in a seemingly innovative way. Just one follow-on question for this before we move on to the weather report. Are there any kind of like, you know, products or use cases that you could see coming out in the next 3 to 6 months given, you know, this rollout?
So I think the biggest one really is what OKX has done with the X-Layer. Because now what they're doing with this is letting users on OKX be able to trade cross-chain without needing to actually navigate to other chains and make those transactions across each blockchain as a singular instance, but putting them all into one single spot. So if I go on to the X-Layer, which is OKX's iteration of this, I can take something from Polygon and use it on ETH mainnet. I can use something on ETH mainnet and use it on the X-Layer. So for trading, for futures, for perps, for all that stuff, streamlining it into one location makes the most sense. And I think we're going to continue to see different scales of this in different iterations as they continue to level it up and make that user process just significantly more streamlined.
Absolutely love it. Big shout out to our partners over at Polygon. Love collaborating with Polygon for this show and other content. We got Nifty Nick coming from a new setting. We got Signal with a new camera. I'm going to sync with Sig to optimize this. Love it. Love the camera stuff. Nick, how you doing, buddy? You are muted, amigo.
Just saw that.
Your audio is awful.
Yeah, the audio is cooked.
Audio sounds like hot garbage, dude. For once, I can finally say this to you. Your audio sucks. Cooked. Your audio is absolutely fucking terrible. Get better audio, you nerd.
Yeah, we won't be able to do it if that's the audio. Let's just dive into the weather report. Nick will get his audio sorted. He is a professional. I'm sure.
Let's go to someone with better audio.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm just gonna start on the weather report. Anyway, guys,
let's rock.
It is Tuesday, April 23rd. That ETH market volume is at 15 million. That Solana market volume is at 4.1. Ordinals is at 13. If you look at the market leaders on Ethereum, DGods, they're up to 25% to 1.7 ETH floor after Cube Exchange partnership rumors emerge. And Frank teases he's going back home. He's going back home to Solana. My Pet Hooligan is down 35% to 0.6 ETH after the launch of their Carrot token. Over on Solana, portals are up to 13 SOL, and Madlands, they're down. They are sub 100, down to 98 SOL. And then finally, over on Ordinals, you've got 8 Odyssey. They're up 50% to 0.015 BTC. And the Puppets, they're up 10% to 0.41 BTC. On a crypto roundup, the majors, they're pretty much flat for a second straight day after the Bitcoin ETF inflows after Bitcoin ETF inflows. You got Bitcoin at 66,000, Ethereum at $3,175, and Solana at $155. On the meme coin side, you got two big launches yesterday. You had Manakay, that cat that does that, leading Solana meme coin in volume as it ran over to 100 million market cap. And BBM Network reached a number four rune, the Runix token, to ETH, and the token ran to its current 7 million market cap. Top three stories over the past 24 hours. Well, firstly, Taproot Wizards founder Udi formally introduced BIP 420 proposal for the opcat, which would allow smart contracts, secure bridges, on-chain trading on the Bitcoin network. Quantum cats are up over 30% over the last 7 days to 0.44 floor. On Magic Eden, they have launched their beta version of their Runes marketplace. The current implementation features a table view of all the listings with a swap view to be released soon that will closer mirror token trading on other chains. Most of the top 10 Runes by volume dipped 20 to 40% over the last 24 hours. And then finally, London-based finance app Revolut listed Bonk for trading. The news comes on the back of their drone show in Dubai. This is very exciting for Clemente, obviously, as they lead the major meme coins over the last 7 days. And they're up over 40% to 1.3 billion market cap. That is all for the weather report.
Fantastic weather report.
How does this sound, Pia?
We can't do it. God.
It was pretty funny. Like, so as soon as Nick came in, right, the commenters poured in, ladies and gentlemen. This is for people that are just listening. I just want to give a little additional context. People came in and, you know, like Al Byrne or AI Byrne said, ooh, that
how
audio.
How about this?
No, can't do it, Nick. Bachelor Society came in and said audio sucks. Category 5 said good God. Then Jose Maddox, a longtime listener, often has funny comments, just comes in and just goes, you suck. And it just came in pretty funny amongst the other comments. It's definitely funny stuff. Fantastic weather report. Some updates from the Daily Bone newsletter, which is available at dailybones.com. It's posted to X every morning as well. We actually have a number of stories, so I'm going to get through them quickly. Portal's first launchpad token, SOMO, announces launch this Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern time, so that might be one to keep an eye out for. My Pet Hooligan, you know that name if you've been around the block in crypto and NFTs for a few years now. That's a video game enterprise in the NFT space. Their token, Carrot, K-A-R-R-A-T, launches and gets listed on Coinbase right off the bat. So you get a nice mainstream exchange listing there. Currently holds an $800 million market cap. Cooking over there in the
absolute
We have to. I have to give a quick shout out to My Pet Hooligan. These guys are freaking crushing it. It feels like no one.
You're on the right mic there, buddy boy.
He's not.
Holy shit!
I don't know what is going on over here with this group.
How about this?
That's better.
That's better, Nick.
Okay. Well, at least the commenter gave feedback that was helpful versus you fucking jerk offs who are basically saying your audio sucks.
So, ladies and gentlemen, the next story, Unisat detects bug causing users to have their runes burned during transactions. They deployed a fix and directed affected users to submit tickets in their Discord. Next story, Venezuela uses USDT for oil export transactions to avoid having assets frozen in foreign bank accounts due to sanctions. That's an important story, ladies and gentlemen, for people that live in developed nations like the United States and some European countries. There's a lot going on internationally when it comes to issues between the government, the people, and currency. That's why Bitcoin exists. Next story, two SEC lawyers resigned. I love this one. Two SEC lawyers resigned after being sanctioned by a judge for abuse of power in a case versus crypto platform DebtBox. Saw D's tweet this one with a little victory lap. This is a fun one for all you, all your crypto maxis that don't want to deal with the SEC. Then next one, U.S. presidential candidate RFK Jr. He's got a lot of fans. Proposed to put the entire United States budget on the blockchain if elected. Funny stuff. Very unrealistic. He gets elected in my mind, but he does say some fun things around Bitcoin from time to time. Last story, crypto Twitter discovered that Yuga Labs is a partner with the globalist-minded World Economic Forum. Are they?
Yes. Yeah. And Garga came out and was like, yeah, that was probably Danny Boy who did it. I have no idea what happened here. Like, his tweet was like a response to someone. He was like, it's probably Dan. I don't know. I didn't do this shit. It was like, okay.
That's pretty wild. All right. Okay. That's hilarious. Ladies and gentlemen, so scroll up a little bit, Clemente. And I think, Clemente, you might still be having strange audio issues. But anyway,
we already mentioned this, how he went to, what was the other one that he was at? What's the other European conference that's going on?
Davos.
In Switzerland.
It was Davos. Yeah.
So he was at Davos shaking hands with world leaders, and now he's at World Economic Forum was the plan, but that's backfired. Unfortunately, he can't do that at this point.
Yeah, Nick pointed out we're talking, ladies and gentlemen, about the former CEO of Yuga Labs, Daniel Allegre. Prior to that, he was a 15-year executive at organizations like Google and Ubisoft, or maybe it was Activision. I could be mistaken about the gaming entity that he was the CEO Activision. Or CEO. Activision. There you go. Anyway, Nick pointed out that he was, basically shaking hands and brushing elbows or whatever the expression is with folks that he went to college with, like the prime minister of Greece. Clemente, if I could just quickly see that tweet one more time.
Greece is corrupt, man.
You're not wrong. Clemente, if I could just see that tweet one more time. So someone pointed out strange and unsettling. I think I saw this some time ago, but why is Yuga Labs an official partner of the WEF, the World Economic Forum, who openly advocates for active policies for depopulating humanity, centralizing control over global food and energy, and techno-enslaving the world class? Like, you know, this person that wrote this tweet, literally, this is a big gotcha, literally trying to just gotcha to Yuga Labs. And Gargamel, the acting CEO and co-founder of Yuga Labs, just comes in and goes, I don't know. Probably Daniel paid to go to a conference or something. I haven't been invited to any Illuminati meetings. I think that's like the perfect response where it's just like, chill out, bro. This was probably our old CEO who like is friends with the Greek prime minister. Anyway, those are some fun stories from the Daily Bone newsletter. We're going to dive into Blast Gold distribution here for about 14 minutes before we're joined by Ram Ahluwalia, CEO of Lumida Wealth and friend of the show. We saw Blast reveal its second round of gold distribution on Friday. Easy, why don't you give the audience a little context just on what Blast is and what gold is in this context? I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, so Blast is the L2 by Blur and Pac-Man, which a lot of people are very excited about. So far, it seems like it is the most undercrowded trade, and I've been speculating, like, man, maybe it's starting to get overcrowded, until I see things like Ansem post a poll of where should people spend their time in the month of May. and only 6% of votes came in on Blast. So I was like, okay, this is still severely undercrowded. And then on top of it, you had Cyrus double down on that and was like, in 30 days, they're going to airdrop $2 billion worth of money to people. And maybe then people will realize Blast is actually like the right path forward for what you should be farming. So if you see here, okay, so it's now up to 10%, which is not terribly surprising. But the thing is, with this Blast Gold allocation, we've just seen a variety of different dApps actually get their allocation and what they're getting. Fantasy.top is a popular one that's gotten a ton of gold. The other one that I've been looking at here is IKB. Shout out D's and Andy. That's, what I believe, their platform. It's a player props platform, and that's the one I've been farming most heavily because it's just one of the easiest to get a ton of allocation. Gold is their point system. Right now, gold is actually selling OTC between $7 and $10 per gold. And a lot of people have thousands of it, like literally thousands of gold. And there's still a pretty untapped market for it where you can go and play things like Crypto Valleys, go on YOLO games, basically just use the dApps, go on Wasabi, provide liquidity, participate with Pac-Moon. And for the first time, we're now going to see tokens also get Blast Gold allocation, which has led to more people picking up memes on Blast. And I think we're going to continue to see a trend there. But because of how early I think this is right now, it makes a lot of sense. Like, just go use Blast, and I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised as far as what this reward and airdrop is going to look like. It reminds me so much of Blur when so many people were like, I don't know, man. I don't think Blur farming's worth it. And then 20 people got $1 million+ in rewards. And I think so many people are thinking the same thing with Blast. They're like, there's not a ton of activity. But for me, I'm like, that's even better. That means that I can get more allocation for a ton of this stuff. By just swapping tokens on Thruster and chasing meme coins, you can get gold. By just going into District 1, which is a SocialFi app, and posting in rooms, you can get gold. So there's like, it's quite simply put, go look at that spreadsheet that Clemente just had up that shows you the total Blast Gold allocation that they shared based on dApps. Find a few that interest you and just go use the applications. Just go use them, and I think you're going to be quite happy in 30 days.
It's so early on this that the way that the information is being communicated is in a Google Sheet. I mean, that you love to see it. You love that that's kind of where we're at with this in terms of, quote, being early. I mean, Kix will talk your ear off about why he's bullish on Blast. And ultimately, like, to be clear, in the NFT corner of the market, this is kind of our guy when it comes to, you know, startup, like building a startup. This is Pac-Man. This is the young MIT dropout that built Blur. And this is his next big thing. Clemente, looks like you wanted to weigh in with something.
Yeah, easy. Are you, I'm curious how you're navigating the Blur and Blast launch that's supposedly happening by the end of April. So we have literally a week left, and the recent tweet or the recent hint of the gold distribution is that I'm assuming it's going to be used and given out to people using Blast or using Blur on Blast. Do you have any theses for that? Do you feel like it'll be mass like volume that we're going to start seeing on Blast NFTs compared to what we're seeing right now?
It's kind of tough to say if we're going to get, quote, mass volume on it, but I think just opening up liquidity to basically eliminate gas fees is really interesting to me. Of course, gas fees have still been historically low. I think the bigger thing to consider, though, is when you have opportunities like this, where once again, a lot of people are just overlooking something that seems straightforward, just go, whatever's announced, whatever's launched, dive in head first and just familiarize yourself with it. I'm not saying go spend countless money on it, but just go read any documentation that gets shared, go click a couple buttons and see how it works. I'm not saying go deploy a bunch of capital, but just get familiar with it, because if you start seeing more and more people getting excited about this, it's better that you have the knowledge of how to use it and take advantage of whatever those reward systems are going to be versus being late to the game and trying to chase when everyone else is. And that's where I'm like, I don't know exactly what this announcement's going to be. And I hope it's something for NFTs that get some level of incentivization on the Blast ecosystem. But I think it's a matter of just being ready to get familiar with whatever it is they roll out. And I think that's the biggest takeaway here, is because of how little people are actually looking at this stuff, with all attention still on Bitcoin, Ordinals, Runes, Solana meme coins, this feels like just a wide open opportunity. I really only see like Cyrus and NFT Stats posting heavily about Blast. And I think those two guys are two guys I would not want to fade. They've done extremely well, especially on some of these more niche areas. They've been wicked early to NFTFi. And they know what they're doing. They do a lot more math than I have time to do. So I just like to tell them.
So I kind of have a couple of thoughts on this, which is, so far, all our interaction on Blast has been because we have a carrot in front of us, which is gold, and this is why we should use it. Not many of us have really been doing the NFT trading. I've actually done pretty much zero NFT trading. I've been using all the other dApps. One of the things that I've been thinking about is A, I'm pretty sure the carrot needs to stay here after the gold has been distributed for us to carry on using the L2. So I'm really curious how Pac-Man is going to want us to keep on using the ecosystem. Right now, you have basically a penalty in place that if you withdraw your money from the bridge, you actually lose all your points. So I think for gold, we actually could see something like that, where perhaps it could be an avenue to be able to realize some of that potential. But at the same time, some of it could stay locked and that carrot keeps being dangled for the next cycle. So that's something I've been thinking about. And then secondly, for the money that does get liquidated and taken out, I'm curious to see where that goes, whether that goes over to Ordinals, that goes to Solana, stays on Blast, carries on, does L2 trading, or perhaps goes over into meme coins. Because last time when it was Blur, what happened with the money that was realized is that it just went straight back into Blur and then it was all farming for season two. So those are a couple of dynamics coming up.
What if we just get a season two of Blast farming though? You know what I mean? Like, what if it's just like, well, here's more gold, and now that you have an idea of what you could have actually made, here it is.
Yeah,
Why not just keep farming?
But that, because that pissed everybody off. Even the when everybody bridged over, we all thought something was going to happen and then nothing happened. And you saw like really large accounts saying, okay, I'm really pissed off. I thought something was going to happen. Now I have to do Blast. And this is why people aren't doing Blast, is because they got turned off that they didn't get given the carrot and the reward at the end. And I have to carry on clicking buttons. So I'm curious to see like what's going to be the carrot in front of us for us to continue using the Blast network.
It's going to be interesting. Easy, do you think that the lack of attention associated with Blast compared to some other corners of the crypto market is because Blast is an NFT-related product and the entire crypto market does not fuck with NFTs at all?
I think so. I think that's kind of what it is. Is like people are still just not really interested in NFTs at the current moment. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, we've actually seen some decent opportunities in NFTs. Like, I know Clemente's up, 3x on Mutantmon on Solana, even though Solana NFTs seem relatively quiet. I've been looking more at things on Tensor to watch, like, volume and stuff like that, where, like, even Mad Lad's under 100 seems really interesting to me because nothing's changed. Like, the thesis has not changed. It's just that liquidity. We don't have any new participants. Like, that's the thing. We have no new participants speedrunning into the ecosystem. So liquidity is still cycling. And so many people are still seeing these gains in other ecosystems that they're starting to move out of, quote, safe haven assets, which I guess is like the Mad Lads, which literally has not given you any sort of like negative tonality. They haven't changed anything. They've done quite literally nothing wrong, but people are selling them to try to get exposure to other ecosystems. Where I'm like, okay, are you selling your Mad Lad to take 100 soul and go chase meme coins in hopes to turn that into 1,000? Potentially. But like at the same time, then my entire thesis is like, why would I not take some capital, watch the meme coin side of things, but also start deploying? Like even ETH NFTs have caught in some legs here. Apes are up 20%, Mutant Apes up 36% over the week, D-God's up 38%, Azuki up 10%. Like there's a bunch of stuff right now that's starting to rally and show signs of life. And that's where I'm like starting to get really interested again while the market continues to look elsewhere. And if we get a liquidity injection or a liquidity type of event from Blast that incentivizes ETH NFTs to trade, I think we see a really nice rally.
Well, I mean, it's definitely fascinating. I want to move on to meme coins. I just want to see, Nick, did you have any insight you wanted to share regarding your thoughts on Blast, maybe from a high level in relation to Pac-Man, Blur, or anything there?
I mean, other than the fact that y'all keep sweating Pac-Man as though he's like some savior of NFTs, even, and he hasn't delivered that recently, you know? Everything's looking like the guy's not actually delivering that. And so I don't know. I mean, is he worth sweating as hard as Pio does? I don't know. That's like debatable at this point in time. In all seriousness, my biggest interest would be Pac-Moon at this moment in time, simply because I'm up to 100 just with a single reply. And I would like to see that number go up. So we'll see how Pac-Moon plays out here. That's the only one that I'm interested in at the moment. I can't do a ton of plays. All I know is that this trade that Easy suggested I take yesterday better pan out. Okay, the captain's trade.
Oh, well, I mean, I think that one's very interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick, of course, referring to Pac-Moon, because when Nick tweets about Pac-Moon, there's potential for Nick as an individual to earn an allocation of the airdrop. So that is why he's focused on it. Moving on to meme coins, we have several that are up in the last 7 days. Pepe, on Ethereum is up 32%. Bonk, the institutional meme coin of Solana, is up 40%. SHIB, the meme coin that accompanied Doge to a very high market cap last cycle, specifically a whopping, in case you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, $48 billion. Yes, you heard that correctly. $48 billion market cap last cycle. Popcat up to 230%. Where's Dog with Hat on this rally here?
It's up 15%, but it was harmed a little bit by Ansem losing the fight last week. It was literally a sell-off when he lost.
Direct correlation. Direct correlation. The second that the first round was over, we saw Whiff just beating, very similar to Ansem.
Why did he even do that fight?
Listen, man. Sometimes people make bad decisions.
It's just very odd to just go and like humiliate yourself athletically. Like it's just, that's a strange thing to do. I don't really understand. There was literally no reason for him to do that. I'm pretty sure that promotion doesn't even pay. Like literally doesn't pay. Like, I mean, zero. I think he literally did that for free. Anyway. All right. And we got Frentech V2 on the 29th. Is there an airdrop associated with this? If I'm not mistaken, there is.
The trading between $3 and $5 per point right now. So like if you have 1,000 points, you're looking at a $3,000 to $5,000 airdrop. There's some people with 10,000 plus points. So you're looking at a pretty substantial airdrop. And after DGen on the base network and Farcaster's reward system, SocialFi is so back. So back.
I don't believe those numbers on Whale Market. I think they're being completely manipulated. Like, with Blast, I can name five people who are farming Blast off the top of my head right now who openly talk about it. Frentech, I don't know anyone who's doing Frentech properly full-time and allocating their time to it. I just feel like, who is it? Whale on Twitter put out a great thread explaining what's going on with the OTC trading there. And I do think that on Frentech numbers are being manipulated because we're just not seeing enough activity and people on the timeline talking about it.
Yeah,
That's my tinfoil take here on Frentech.
It's Signal. I think part of it was the fact that they had like most of the usage was in October to November of last year, and since then, like they haven't been trying to push the platform. The narrative is basically that Racer is building and working on this V2, and that the distribution was basically they sold none of it, or there's no token allocation to the VCs. So the narrative is that VCs, if they want to get exposure, which I don't know necessarily why they would want to, unless Frentech is just an absolute monster of a platform, it's V2, that they would like, it's like VCs need to buy these just like everybody else, and they're going to do it once these points go live. But I don't know why you would want to be buying. I actually agree with you, Signal. I don't know why you'd want to buy the Frentech token at these prices.
I just think the prices are overinflated. I'm sure the people who use it in sort of like, let's call it season one, when the version one came out, I know people accumulated points. We were all playing Frentech when it came out. I think Nick was like one ETH to buy a share at some point, but then we all stopped using it. And I just think the prices right now seem overinflated versus what the current sentiment is and the amount of activity. But right now I'm seeing people in Runes, in Ordinals, Solana, Base, SocialFi, Blast, all of this, but I'm not really seeing people talk about Frentech. Maybe it's just my timeline, but for that to be $3 to $5 feels overpriced.
I see Frentech on my timeline primarily via Ansem, who keeps like quote tweeting Frentech's account, and they have like a new release, like V2 is what they called it. I went and used the app and they made the interface worse, if that's actually possible. So shout out to Frentech. You guys have, I guess, apparently not hired any like product designers because it's confusing AF. To figure out how to use the app. That space is so tough for me. And the problem is like last time you ended up with people who were just like, who trusts anybody that's like pumping a Frentech account at this point in time? Like, it's like fool me once, shame on you. What is it? Fool me twice, shame on me.
No, but you're right, Nick. You're absolutely right. We don't have to dive too deep into Frentech. I think Blast, everyone is in agreement that Blast is more likely to have longevity than FriendTech would. I mean, I don't want to totally dismiss FriendTech. I just think that the saga of FriendTech has been odd. And I think the anonymous founder thing is odd. And there's just kind of a lot there that I don't really get. Is it backed by Paradigm, though?
Yes.
So that part makes it very interesting. It is look, crypto is hard to navigate, man. It's really hard to navigate, and it's hard to tell if this stuff is the real deal or not. Nick, if you had to pick one meme coin to ride, one horse to ride until, mid-2025, is it Bonk? Is it Pepe? Is it SHIB? Is it Doge? Is it Whiff? What's your one that you would, or is it one of the meme, Milady coins that we've seen? Like, what is the one meme coin to rule them all in Nick's world?
All right. Well, thanks for asking what the top three are that I would bet on. And those are, I now have holdings in Epic, which is OSFs.
You mean Mando, right?
Sorry, Mando. Oh, Mando. Whatever. Aren't they the same person?
he's coming on the show the day after tomorrow. Be nice.
So in terms of, I own that one and I've owned it for a long time. Bonk. Specifically, I like. I haven't been, the Pepe squad has been less prevalent or like on my timeline. So I don't see it as much. But Bonk, bought some drones that they had flying their logo out in Dubai, which definitively is, the sort of activity that we're hoping for when it comes to meme coins,
It's up 40% since the drones, Nick.
What? There we go. So it's actually hilarious. I feel like meme coins are actually the best version of NFTs at this moment in time, because the expectation is people are going to do stupid shit with the money, which is a way better place than like being like, all right, like walk me through your business plan here. Whereas with the meme coins, people are just like, yo, they got drones and flew that shit in the sky.
The dog has a hat, dude. The dog's got a hat.
There's more. Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
Well, I just feel like that's like just a better overall sort of market to be operating in, which is like, hey, let's do stupid shit rather than NFTs, where you got Yuga trying to explain why they were on the World Economic Forum's list of people partners that they were working with, you're not seeing that with Bonk. Like, there's no way Bonk's going to be listed as a partner with the World Economic Forum. They're just like, yeah, we flew drones, in Dubai, and that it looked dope.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Which I think is, generally speaking, that's a pretty interesting thing when the expectation is just marketing spend. That's pretty powerful, and I'd much rather, Well, we can talk about that later. But bottom line is, I like Bonk. I like Epic. And I guess,
are you out on Doge?
I own some Mog.
Very low market cap on Mog. Very interesting, because it does seem like there's traction.
Oh wow! Looks like I still have $2,000 in Pepe. There we go. Big fan of Pepe.
Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest today. Okay. Very special guest, a friend of the show, second time having him on the show. We are honored that he's joining us. He's the CEO of Lumita Wealth, the CEO and co-founder of Peer IQ, got an exit there in 2021, has extensive experience trading both stocks and digital assets, giving us a little bit of an institutional point of view today. We have Ram Ahluwalia. Ram, welcome to the show. You are muted.
Thanks for having me. Great to be back again. Good to see you. Absolutely.
I should also mention that you have a new podcast on Laura Shin's podcast network, which
that's gonna be a lot of fun. Yeah, that's called Bits and Bips, as in basis points. It'll be myself, Alex Kruger, Joe McCann from Asymmetric, and James Safer from Bloomberg Intelligence. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Really excited. That's going to start in a handful of weeks. But I'm very much looking forward to that. It'll be great.
Now that's a podcast. Getting Joe in there is epic. Obviously, among the other kick-ass guests. Yeah. Ram, so last time you came on, there was no Bitcoin ETFs were not trading yet.
Right.
There seemingly people were expecting the Fed to cut rates much sooner than has played out. How weird has 2024 been from your perspective?
I wouldn't say it's been terribly weird, actually. I think the market was offside on rates by expecting a pivot that never came. Obviously, we didn't expect a pivot. You know, Mr. Market hallucinated a pivot back in December after that Powell press conference. But you know, inflation's been more sticky, been more persistent. You see that in the CPI and within CPI around shelter costs. So now the market's recalibrating on what it means to be higher for longer on both interest rates and also on inflation. So since the last Fed conference, what we're seeing is that kind of indigestion across asset prices. And you're seeing assets that are rate sensitive, like real estate investment trusts, get punished, and other asset classes, and long duration securities, unprofitable technology companies. And it's kind of like a mini shadow from what we saw last summer during August to October, when you also had this higher for longer narrative that weighed in on equity prices. I expect it'll wrap up in a couple of weeks around Mother's Day, give or take. And the fact that equity markets have held together while the 10-year's gone to like 4.6%, it's generally held. It has like 5% correction, which is really nothing. That's a good sign, but I do expect there's more indigestion ahead. I think rates aren't done going higher.
Fair. And I guess, do you expect a rate cut in 2024 still?
I'm more in the camp of like reassess. It's very hard to look out 9 months. I can look out 3 months. I do not see June cuts for sure. We've had that view for a while. I don't see any July cuts. Goldman still expects July cuts, by the way, just so you know, that's not consensus, that view. Goldman will be wrong again. They were wrong on March cuts also. So
what a call out of Goldman Sachs from Ram Aluwalia, ladies and gentlemen.
They're so wrong. They're so wrong on this stuff. I mean, it's kind of laughable. So, you know, the July cuts, I don't think will happen. Then when we get to July, we reassess based on the data between now and then. What's the main data point to look at? It's a CPI. There's a lot of data that comes out every week, right? Like GDP will come out this week, the PCE will come out. The main thing is just CPI. That's the main thing to focus on. And look, you've got like these Fed governors like Kashkari and Bostic who are saying, why are you going to cut rates if the economy is strong? Which is true. Why would you do that? And look, the flip side is the economy is strong. So, you know, the fact that inflation is higher is driven by the fact that the economy is strong. They're actually going hand in hand.
Yeah, well, fantastic insight, Ram. And I guess when you think about Bitcoin specifically, obviously, we largely discuss crypto on this show. We have the Bitcoin right. ETFs having a really big impact in their first 100 days. We finally gotten a little bit of a slowdown on inflows compared to where they were at. I mean, you know, interviewing people like Dan Held, interviewing people like Nathaniel Whitmore, right at, you know, in the, call it 50 days after the ETFs started trading live, everyone kind of universally was saying as bullish of a scenario as you could have predicted has happened. Obviously, we've slowed down a little bit. We did get a new all-time high before the halving. Do you put weight into the Bitcoin cycle or do you not really care about that? Does an all-time high before the halving matter to you? Does the halving even matter to you? How do you think about this stuff?
That's a really good question. So one is you're seeing the miners do quite well the last few days. Not all of them.
But not before that, Ram. It was not looking great.
Well, they were, yeah, shellacked going into the halving because the cost of computing the next block just doubled on average. I'm simplifying. If you got great tech, actually you have an advantage. There's a lot of complexity around miners, right?
Yeah.
But you're also seeing the fee revenue for miners go up a lot. And miners, I claim, are a leading indicator for Bitcoin. So miners are doing well. That's a good sign. That's on the bull case side of things. We've also seen the Fed talk about tapering, quantitative tightening. Quantitative tightening is when the Federal Reserve chooses to do the opposite of buying bonds in the open market. They're not replacing bonds that are running off on their balance sheet, right? So the Fed has bought trillions of mortgages and treasury bonds to the tune of like $9 trillion, right? Over the last 10 years. Wild, okay?
Wild.
Wild stuff. It's like the stuff hasn't happened like before 2011 in American history. Okay. So, but they're, you know, that's like an inflationary position that I didn't expect to see coming. And also we saw in their last press conference, if you look at what's called the dot plot. So the dot plot says, hey, here's our expectation of how rates will unfold in the months and quarters ahead, as well as variables like GDP growth and inflation. And what you see is they're tilting towards a higher for longer view, but while having that view, they also expect higher growth and higher inflation. So it seems like they're willing to tolerate somewhat more inflation, which is actually bullish for asset prices if you're not going to raise rates. Raising rates would be really awful. I don't think they're going to do that. They did that, they will lose credibility. I think what they're going to do is keep rates higher for longer. So I'd say like watch miners. You know, Bitcoin right now is at a very crucial technical level. I'm looking at it on my chart right now.
Nick likes the sound of that. He loves a good chart.
Yeah, it's a, I'll just share my screen.
We'd love it if you shared your screen, Rob.
Here we go. So yeah, look, at right now it's a very, you know, here's a chart showing Bitcoin, and you've got the 200-day in the gray, you've got the 50-day in the blue and the 20-day. So it's like, it's at a crucial technical level. It kind of needs to make or break here. And, you know, it has demonstrated a different kind of correlation from tech, which has been trounced last week and really over the last month or so, but it, you know, it's kind of performed during that period. And, you know, it's trading with respect to multiple factors, including the US dollar, and the US dollar has strengthened as well, right, over the last few months, along with the 10-year, because the US is paying out higher interest rates than other countries because of the higher for longer policy. And that's attracted more dollar inflows. And the US is still the best place to invest in the world. You really can't think of a country that has the kind of growth opportunities that the US does. So yeah, Bitcoin, like very hyper tactically, is at a crucial level. I'd say watch the miners on the one hand. The miners is the bullish story. I'd say like the bearish story is the 10-year dollar. I think there's 2 to 4 more weeks of indigestion that needs to play out. I think in equities, we have a relief rally that took place yesterday, maybe continuing today. But I don't think the correction is done there. So what we want to see is, well, how does Bitcoin perform during that? And by the way, we have seen many days where Bitcoin's up and like tech stocks are down, just to be clear, right?
Yep.
And that many times, yep. Right? The question is going to be, if risk aversion goes up. Risk aversion is when people like, you know, coil up and get like defensive in a turtle shell. If risk aversion goes up, then all asset prices come down in price. And we've seen that a handful of times. And that's kind of the over under. I'd also point to CoinDesk. I love this chart. I'll share this too. So this is CoinDesk's Bitcoin trend indicator. And they have a trend following strategy built on this. This is the price of Bitcoin. So strong green means strong uptrend. Strong red means strong downtrend and everything in between. And in a bull market, which we're in right now, it's been a good strategy to buy the dip. And if you see, if you had bought Bitcoin anytime it's in this yellow zone, it's done pretty well.
Yep.
And you hang on and then gets back into a yellow zone, you buy. So we're in that zone right now. Looks like we're exiting that zone, and that's bullish. So it's a good tool to have, you know, just to get out of your own head and just look at an objective rules-based system to measure, are things overbought or underbought?
Yeah, Ram, it's easy. Anyway, Nick, go ahead.
So a couple of things. First of all, with this chart, you're saying ape every last dollar that you have into Bitcoin. So I appreciate that position. That's kind of how I've been feeling trading the dip. You said there's this pullback. I know that you're a big NVIDIA bull. What's the current with this pullback? Are you entering any new positions here?
Yeah. So we brought on a new client account that didn't have any NVIDIA. So we always seek to get a minimum thematic exposure to our core secular bets. Okay. That's one.
However, Ram, to translate that, a new client comes to you, they don't have any NVIDIA, you kind of slap them on the back of the head and you're like, we're going to sink our teeth into NVIDIA right now.
Right. So, so here it's kind of two ways to look at it. So one is you want to make sure you have minimum thematic exposure. What I mean by that is, like, we have certain views of the world. We believe that semiconductors will do well. You know, NVIDIA is a part of that, and so are their names. We think nuclear energy is going to do well. You know, the uranium miners and manufacturers of enriched uranium will do well. And we think aging demographics, there are a number of these themes. At the same time, though, we also believe markets are overbought. In fact, we wrote about how the, you know, forward price to earnings ratio on semiconductors was quite high about like a month and a half ago, right? And so, you know, if you're an existing client, we actually titrated down our semiconductor exposure, right? So this is what makes investing really difficult, actually, because, like, what's the approach you take when you do believe in this 10-year outlook, these secular trends? You want to make sure you have a minimum exposure for sure, because you might be wrong on your tactical view, right? What if the Fed had cut rates? Markets would have zoomed right up. For instance, I don't think the Fed's going to do that. But, you know, being humble in investing means you do want to take like a mixed strategy. You want to make sure you have enough skin in the game to participate, right? So at a minimum, every client at least owns like at least 6 to 8% of NVIDIA in their portfolio, which, by the way, the benchmark weight for NVIDIA in like QQQ is around 6%. So if you own less than 6% NVIDIA, then you are technically underweight a benchmark. People think 6% might be high. It's actually not. That's the benchmark, right? But, you know, other holdings that, you know, we own more Google. Google's like one of our top holdings right now. We bought a boatload when it dipped like in mid-Feb. We wrote about this on Twitter. We were like screaming from the mountaintops. And now it's like all-time highs, or it was like last week. I don't know exactly where it is day to day, right? Yeah, all-time high. Look at that.
Wow. Love it, Rob.
This chart looks ridiculous.
I mean, it was such a layup. By the way, that thing is cheaper than all the Mag 7 securities, any other one. Google, and they've got the data to win the AI game. Like, if you're going to compete in AI, you need data. Google's got the data through search. It's got plenty of data from the YouTube content that's uploaded, including your fine show.
Our content, we're feeding their data. They're using us.
The next AI. God help us all.
Ram, and who's a customer of Google? I mean, excuse me, who is Google a customer of? NVIDIA.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a great point, right? So, you know, what you saw in the last few weeks is Google saying we're going to spend $100 billion on AI and data centers. Microsoft said that. Amazon said that. And Meta. And some numbers are $50 billion, $100 billion, $150 billion. Now, Jensen, the CEO of NVIDIA, at his AI conference says, look, there's $1 trillion in spend coming in the next 10 years. And that's not just these big tech companies, it's also the governments, right? Saudi Arabia has 60 data centers. I know three cities in Saudi Arabia. It's like, what, Medina, Jeddah,
Riyadh,
right? Okay. You and me are on the same trivia team next time. But look, there's only three cities and they have 60 data centers. That's one country, by the way. Okay. What about the Department of Defense? How many data centers do they need? We're not hearing anything about that.
At least two.
At least two. And what about the disaster recovery for these data centers? The backup. I mean, so the data center trend is a big trend. It's a big 10-year trend. And we're still in the early innings of that. We have far more to go on that. So, yeah, like, I think NVIDIA is, they're the highest ROI compute. They've got an edge over AMD and Intel. I've written about that. I don't like AMD or Intel. NVIDIA, look, the 80% profit margin, you know, their forward PEs in the kind of the 30 zone. NVIDIA is cheaper than many stocks like Palantir, by the way, and like many other stocks. NVIDIA is cheaper than Amazon, by the way.
I love your bullishness on NVIDIA, Ram. When you get going on it, it's hilarious. And real quick, so is your position, I want to go to Nick in just a sec, is your position there is no second best, like Michael Saylor style, when it comes to NVIDIA in the AI sector?
Correct. That's true. Now, I will say, yeah, that's exactly right. There is no second best. I will say now, just tactically, I guess, circle back around. Like, so if we have a fresh account coming on board, we're going to get them these minimum thematic exposures. Tactically, though, we'll wait and we're patient, right? Because markets are correcting now. Momentum has broken in the market. It was a momentum market. It was a momentum market around quality stocks and themes like semiconductors and AI. That's pulling back. It's pulling back because the 10 years going up, because markets are processing all of that. I don't think that correction's done. I think it'll be done in a few weeks. And when we see that opportunity, then we'll go overweight our themes and names like NVIDIA. So for existing accounts, we're not actually accumulating more NVIDIA because, again, we think that it's going to pull back. However, for a new account, you want to get a you want to get some minimum chips on the table. Yeah, so you have some exposure, at least the benchmark, right? That's what we think like a good rational balanced approach is.
Nick?
I got a question about crypto, but before diving into it, dude, the financials on Google are so absolutely absurd. If you just look at it, their quarterly net income is $20 billion. Their annual net income is $73 billion. They grew 13% year over year just on their top line revenue, which is insane when you're making $76 billion a year. Like, that's just in it. There's so much cash. My question is like, which is not actually, sorry, I want to move on from Google, but where is that money going to go? They have so much, like absolutely so much money. It just seems insane. What their current position is.
They can buy back their stock, which would be terrific. Also, I'll share my screen again here, and I'll compare like Google to these other Mag 7 stocks.
Let's go.
Look, the headline on Google is, look, they got the data. Oh, you know, there's so many ways they can win. If they just charge subscription fees to access AI, like OpenAI does, $20 a month, which they've never done, but they can. Imagine an AI-powered Gmail, AI-powered Android phone. That would be another source of earnings. So they've got a lot of levers to pull. But what you can see here is, here's Google's, here's a Ford PE. And number one, it's the cheapest in the entire category. And expectations are low, which is actually bullish, right? By expectations, I mean, if you look at like their Ford earnings, you can see Ford earnings expectations are low. I like that. That means it's a lower bar to cross. That's why the valuation is also lower. But people are misreading this. They're, the mistake investors make is they overinvest in consensus names with high expectations, which also have high valuations. And when they disappoint, like Snowflake, then they get clobbered.
Yeah, I mean well, look,
Snowflake's a tough one. So I saw a comment asking what your take is on Tesla. It's been getting hammered, but also based on what that showed, it has the highest forward PE of any of the stocks. Dude, Tesla, which means what? You got another 50%
we've been
downside?
Very clear on Tesla for a long time. And yeah, Apple.
You bear post Tesla like it's your job. And I used to have, I had $80,000 of Tesla when I first started following you, Ram. I now have zero. I'm not exaggerating. I don't have exposure to Tesla off of 80 grand. So I literally liquidated everything gradually as it was just going down. And I don't even do that, but I just wanted more Bitcoin. And you were like in my ear via your tweets. Quickly, Ram, on Tesla, a friend of mine who is a Tesla whale, he has millions of dollars of shares, texted me, said, I'm going to start DCAing back into Tesla before $140, but below $140. Hopefully it touches $100 during the next few months, but I doubt it. You're laughing. What's your take here, Ram?
All right, look, there's short term and long term. Let's start. You should take an investor perspective in longer term, and you get long term capital gains treatment too. So, No, long-term, no. There's so many issues around Tesla. Like, let me count the ways. Like, number one, competition from China is increasing. You have BYD, which is a Buffett-backed EV company in China. They're manufacturing EVs at $15,000. That's why Tesla has to do price cuts. And price cuts mean less margin and less earnings.
Yeah.
They're going to report after 4 o'clock, and it's going to be awful. It's going to be awful. Bad.
They've had bad earnings reports like 7 quarters in a row or something.
Yes. And they keep, you know, the Ford PE is still more expensive than any of the stocks in MAG7, including NVIDIA, because even though the price is dropping, you would think that the Ford PE would come down, but earnings are also dropping at the same time. So it's still expensive. So the main thing is, like, you want to own monopolies that have a dominant competitive position, number one. Two, you don't want to own companies that compete on price. When inflation goes up, Wrigley's raises their prices and passes on to the customer. That's why Wrigley's is a Buffett business, or Dairy Queen, right? When you're in a price competition, then you are transferring the value creation to the consumer. Microsoft doesn't have to do that. Google doesn't have to do that. NVIDIA doesn't have to. Even NVIDIA's got an 80% profit margin. You don't want to play games that involve competition. So Tesla, you know, it was a wonderful ride. Look, they created the category. It's incredible what they're doing for civilization and humanity and all that. But yeah, and then higher rates too, and the higher insurance costs. You know, if you want to get an EV, auto insurance costs themselves are already going up. Like within the CPI, auto insurance inflation is over 20% year over year. It's wild, insane. And for EVs, it's even worse. And now the resale value. So the story of buying a Tesla is like, look, if I buy a Tesla, I can save my fuel. Except you give it back in insurance. And those price cuts, you give it back in a lower resale value of the car.
Yeah, the value of the car just tanks.
$20,000. We're talking price cuts are so meaningful. Like, you're going to save fuel, what, $3,000 a year? But then you give it back in a $15,000 price cut. And you got $15,000 shipments of BYD EVs coming soon in the next few years. So they need tariffs. They've been actually arguing that we need tariffs. They do need tariffs to compete with China because they cannot compete on price.
Nick?
This is unrelated to any of the stock stuff.
That's okay.
Do you own any NFTs, meme coins? If so, how are you thinking about that side of things, which is obviously the riskiest edge?
Yeah, it is. I own like a handful of meme coins. If it makes sense to use the word quality meme coins.
The majors.
The majors. I think the majors are a good place, but you're right. It's like the riskiest of the riskiest stuff. Our clients are not in that, by the way. Like, I like to learn by, you know, experimenting. And if you have some capital risk, it causes you to focus on it. So that's how I think about it. I don't have the expertise in NFTs also. I get the asset class. I respect it. Like, I don't have that skill like you all do, right? So it's just tough for me to participate in that category. And then it's hard. Look, you got to have, like, it's not tradable on Schwab. You know, we do have the ability. We have this new kind of white glove service where we can access tokens non-custodially and the client maintains their keys. So it's pretty cool.
You told us about it last time you were on the show. It has a black and gold logo. Is it called L2?
Yeah, L1 Advisors. That's right. That's right. So I believe we're the first SEC registered investment advisor to offer that, which is super cool. Because, you know, the SEC doesn't allow you, makes it very difficult for an advisor to help clients access and manage crypto. Because of rules, like, it's called like the custody rule. Like, you have to have a custodian, like a Charles Schwab, which we do for equities, where we don't custody anything. But in crypto, well, how do you do that? We don't want to custody any crypto either. So this technology allows the client to custody themselves. They can self-custody. We feed them trade recommendations on an app. They hit approve, and that gets executed on the chain, which is great. Great for the client, great for us. And that also opens up the set of tokens you can invest in because they don't have to be listed on Coinbase, which, as you know, when something's listed on Coinbase, it's like the last stop on the train.
Yep.
Coinbase, in a way, is kind of like an IPO. you know, the first stop in the train is gate.io, maybe like Binance. And then there's seven other places in between. You know, Uniswap is early in that as well, right? So we'd rather be able to participate early before the market shines a light on it and lifts those tokens up into higher kind of price point. Yeah, I'd focus on quality though right now. For the next few weeks, I'd focus on quality like L1s. And then after the dip, if I'm right about this 10-year causing some dislocation in equities, again, crypto is a harder story to read there, but you know, if that happens, then you can rotate into those like altcoin names and then they should zoom up higher on the other side.
Yeah, and we're coming off of a little bit of a rally in the kind of meme coin sector, and I do want to talk about L1s quickly after this. But out of the quote majors, which one do you think is the most interesting, and which one do you think that is the riskiest that you own on the meme coin side? I'd love to know.
Oh, on the meme coin side, again, like I wouldn't say like I have like the deepest expertise on this, but look, I think Bonk is interesting. I think Dog with Fat is interesting, actually. You know, Bonk has the utility through the Telegram bot, right?
Yes.
It's quite interesting, right? In that sense. But, you know, I would pay attention to momentum for these assets. You know, focus on the assets that have momentum. Because crypto is a momentum market. Crypto is all momentum, right? So when momentum is fading, you want to get out. And the one way to measure that is to look at the ranking of the change in price on a daily or weekly basis. So if you see a token that's rising in the leaderboard over the last day or week, then it's gaining momentum. That's what you want. Now, if it's declining momentum, that's a warning sign, right? That's a simple way to look at it. Pepe is interesting too. Like I really look at it from a momentum overlay perspective. That's how I would try to analyze that.
Sure. I also love you advising our audience here to panic sell when the momentum is going away. Just kidding, Rob. Just kidding. Well, go ahead.
I'll say this: like momentum cuts both ways, and you know, if you're, you know, your risk management matters, and you know, if you're in less liquid tokens, like there's more risk. So you really have to know what you're doing, like with this stuff. Like if you're not on it like every day, it's, and you're late to the party, you should first of all recognize that. Like I believe we're past mid-cycle right now.
Very interesting. Okay. You think we're past mid-cycle?
Past mid-cycle with crypto?
Yes. I think we're post mid-cycle.
Do you think we're winding down here?
No. So mid-cycle, look, a lot of the gains happen like in the last 2 months of the crypto rally, by the way, as you know, right? Like when things go parabolic, that's a short time window when you have a concentrated set of gains. But in terms of like measuring time, I'd say we're post mid-cycle is my sense of things.
I mean, yeah. Very interesting.
Well, I don't know. I know people's hearts are, those comments, they were really quite interesting. Look, I think it's somewhere between election.
Some guy just killed himself in the comments. What the heck?
It's just being aware of where you are in the cycle, right? Just being aware of that. And this cycle has moved really quick, right? A lot of people were off sides last year. They should have been investing more. I know when I was on your show in September, October, we talked about that. And I was like, yeah, make sure you have the exposures you need. And the second
your quote at that time, Ram, you said the time to invest was actually last month. It was like, it was right at the
peak. September.
Yes.
Which was peak bearishness too.
Yes.
Peak bearishness. And so, I think everyone kind of scrambled to get back in. That was crypto native. The ETF is the number one thing to look at. The flows, the number one thing to look at. That is the primary driver of the market. So that's why I'm glad we have James on this new show with Laura Shin. I told Laura, she's like, Ram, who should you get? I said, make sure you get James on there every week. James, tell us about the flows. Is the spot flowing? James has a much broader perspective on other ETFs too and other market insight, which is great. So But yeah, you got to just watch those flows. And you know, like, I'm glad to see Hong Kong approved ETFs for Bitcoin. That's fantastic, right? And other digital assets. That's great. You know, there are ETFs in you know, South Korea, China, Hong Kong that access U.S. securities that have a premium to NAV of like 10-15%. It's wild because they have so much demand for U.S. securities. But we've also seen the demand. There's a tremendous amount of demand from South Korea and China for things like NFTs and meme coins. So, you know, that's good to see. It's good to see more of, you know, more of those flows.
Absolutely. Signal has a question, then Clemente.
Yeah, Rom, what indicators are you looking at to say that we're past mid-cycle?
Yeah, good question. So I think a few things. One is, you know, time. Another is price. You know, another, you know, other indicators I like to look at are things like funding rates, events. So we had a few major events. We had the Bitcoin ETF is a big one.
Yes.
You know, major events usually are like the end of a cycle, you know, like the launch of the Bitcoin futures contract, right? I don't think ETF is that because it actually brings in real, you know, cash in from segments that couldn't access the asset class before. You know, if you look at, let's pull up this chart here again. If I go back to, you know, the Bitcoin chart from, you know, CoinDesk. And there we go.
Here we go.
So, you know, these, we had a bear market. And what's the relationship in time between the length of a bear market and a bull market? You know, maybe one for one-ish. And, you know, so you got a bear market for this length of time here. You're in a bull market for this period of time. You know, you're halfway through. That's one way to look at it. You know, so I try to look at a couple different things. This is, you know, as much intuition as, you know, having a like a static data point to look at.
But do you think that the ETFs could elongate that just solely due to the amount of capital that's flowing in? Like, we've never seen a cycle in which TradFi capital has entered into the space.
Well, yeah, I think to your point, that's why we got to keep watching the flows, right? It's all about the ETF flows. And can anyone really make a prediction of the total number of flows between now and year end? Not even BlackRock can do that.
No, no one knows.
They have a sales force. From what I've gathered, they've trained somewhere between 20 to 40% of their sales force to go market this offering. So there's more to go. They have to still, you know, ramp up the rest. And, you know, the irony about Bitcoin is that more people flow in if the price goes up, right? That's how it works. Higher prices attract more interest. That's why it's also momentum asset, right? So, okay, at what price level does it hit when people start to get cautious because they don't want to chase, which is what's happened with, like, say, semiconductors. These are fine businesses, right? But people are like, oh, well, it's rallied. NVIDIA's up 50% year to date. Maybe I'm chasing too much, even though the earnings are growing at the same rate, right?
Is that number $100,000 for Bitcoin, for example?
Right, right. Exactly. Or more, and what level and all of that. And then when we get to those levels, what does funding rates look like? What does sentiment look like? That's a big deal, right? If you get to those levels and there's a lot of skepticism, that's bullish. If you get to those levels and people are not doing, you know, levered trades, that's bullish, right? Remember, like in 2021, I want to say around the Coinbase IPO, the basis trade, meaning you could sell Bitcoin futures and buy spot, and essentially you're market neutral, you could earn like a 28% annualized yield.
Free money glitch.
Free money for no market risk, because people were willing to lever and borrow to go long Bitcoin. So when you see that, that's a warning sign. In fact, just like a month ago, or so maybe a month and a half ago, you saw those elevated funding rates. In some cases, they're 30, 40, 50%, depending on the token or the asset. That's a warning sign. They've come back down a lot, which is great. So we've kind of washed out a lot of that excess. So, you know, when you cross those price points, those are the things that you want to keep an eye on. 100,000, 125,000, 150,000, kind of reassess and measure where we are there. And Bitcoin will move, you know, in a discontinuous, it'll just jump. Got to have a pre-position.
Yeah. Well, Fred Krueger, who's a great Twitter follow, obviously he's kind of extreme at times, but he pointed out that this guy's a PhD in math from Stanford. He pointed out that Bitcoin only makes moves to the upside that are greater than 5% less than 15 days in a calendar year. So when you talk about a lot of people were off sides, a lot of people were sidelined, you talk about having a minimum level of exposure. How could you ever time when Bitcoin's going to make an explosive move up?
It's hard. I don't think you really should. Like when you like that CoinDesk indicator, when it's yellow, okay, time to accumulate.
Exactly.
That's, if your top level view is we're in a bull market, you got to start with the top level biggest pick. Are we in a bull market? Yes or no? If yes, then you buy the dip. And how do you measure that? You use a framework, I think, like this CoinDesk indicator. I think it's one of additional tools some of which talked about to figure out how you want to approach it.
I love it. Clemente has a question. Then I have some quick hitters before we let you go, Ram. Clemente, yeah, please.
Real quick, Ram, I remember you called the local top of Solana back in December when it was at $120. Since then, it pulled back. You said ETH has some room to run. ETH then did, I think, a 40% gain. Now we're sitting with Solana at 157. It dipped all the way down to like 120. Well, I'm curious what you make of Ethereum, Solana, maybe AVAX, especially with the ETH ETF next month. I'm curious how you kind of rank and thinking about those.
This is like the hardest question, by the way, that I really am trying to grapple with. And I think there are limits to analysis also, especially where we are now versus where we were then. See, back then, Solana was so consensus. Everyone had backed into the thing. That is like, all right, when everyone's on one side of the boat, you can go to the other side of the boat because there's no one left to buy. And that was the reasoning there. All of the major L1s have a good story, right? Bitcoin stories, the ETF flows. ETH has a couple of stories. Eigenlayer airdrop coming, I think, is a big one. Actually, when you inject a bunch of new wealth into the ecosystem, like Uniswap did during DeFi summer-ish, that's bullish. And then obviously the ETH ETF. Who knows when that's happening? Now, that's obviously been bearish, short-term, bullish, longer-term. And then Solana's story is that it has momentum, which is the number one thing you should look for in crypto assets, momentum and quality too, right? So, you know, it's the next on-ramp for folks that don't want to pay transaction fees and want a clean user experience and without having to bridge to an L2. So, I mean, that's a legitimate point. Maybe I want to own all three because humility means that I think you should. Like, I don't know that I can conclude and like draw a chart on a graph and say, oh, this is the answer. And that, I don't think that's it. I don't think you can do that where we stand today. It's difficult. It really is difficult.
Love the answer. Very, very honest and humble. So some quick hitters, Ram. Last cycle, bad actors, FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, Celsius, Mashinsky, Terra Luna, Do Kwon, Three Arrows Capital, Suzu, Kyle Davies. Did the action and the behavior by those bad actors lead to the price of Bitcoin actually being higher than it was supposed to in your mind or lower?
Wow, great question. I would say what led to prices being higher included the Widowmaker Grayscale trade, where they had that premium to NAV on these Grayscale products like GBTC, which had a 20%, even up to like 50% premium to NAV. And they were borrowing from their affiliate Genesis, all owned by the same company, DCG, run by Barry Silbert. And so they were buying, that machine was a conveyor belt. So if you had a premium to NAV, you could deliver Bitcoins, what Kyle Davies and 3AC and all these guys did is they, BlockFi did too, right? They would deliver the Bitcoin, they'd get that premium as long as the price is maintained. They could turn around, they'd borrow from Genesis, and that machine helped propel the prices higher. I think they also propelled prices lower. Leverage is a two-way sword, right? When the discount to NAV on GBTC went below 20, 25, then 30%, it caused these funds to blow up like 3AC. In a way, it was good because we found out that allegedly some of these funds were committing fraud, right? And then by the time November 16th rolled around, November 16th was the bottom of the market for Bitcoin. And what happened on that day was Genesis halted all withdrawals.
Yep.
Peak fear moment in the wake of FTX blowing up. So it was really both on the upside and on the downside. By the way, why isn't Kyle Mashinsky in jail? Like, what the hell is that guy doing walking around?
Alex Mashinsky, Celsius.
Celsius. Alex Mashinsky. Why is he not in? I don't get it.
I think he did get arrested. I could be mistaken about that. I was under the impression that he was awaiting trial or something like that. Okay. I think, yeah. I guess what's his name? Sam Trabuco is the only gentleman that walked scot-free in this whole thing. If you really boil it down,
interesting.
From FTX,
right? Right. I think there's some other names out there that haven't been held accountable. I'm not going to name them.
Air them out, Rom.
There are other names out there. There's other names out there, including like in the FTX, but even outside of FTX. There's a lot of nonsense that happened around Prime Trust, for example. If you guys remember that.
Prime Trust custodied Bitcoin for Swan Bitcoin, which is an organization. Right. Also for Strike, another organization. Strike switched from Prime Trust, and I saw that, and I was like, huh. I was under the impression Prime Trust was like the gold standard for Bitcoin custody. And you probably have more detail beyond that than I do.
Fully reserved. How do they not have the reserves? That's either gross negligence if they didn't have the systems in place, or it's fraud. I'm going to probably guess it's fraud.
Yeah.
So, I think it went both ways on that. But look, this system's a lot cleaner now, right? It's you've got like BlackRock. Larry Fink is leading the charge, who's legitimating the asset class, which is a big deal. And, geopolitically, you've got countries that don't want dependency on the US dollar. And there are a lot of wealthy families that are investing in crypto, but don't want to be known as investing in crypto, by the way. But they are.
Look at that. I love that detail right there, Rom. People don't want to publicly talk about it, but they kind of get it, probably because...
Some of them do, like Jurvetson, right, who runs a VC fund. And obviously, there's the Michael Saylors of the world. But there are other, like quite a few families that are recognized names that own... There's one family invest... There's a meme coin fund that's launching, which is kind of funny. Some of their backers are like prominent families. So I'll just leave it at that. I'm like, wow, this is pretty interesting.
Wow. So some LPs for a meme coin fund that have some big names, the kind of big financial names that you hear. Two quick hitter questions, Rom. First one, MicroStrategy or Coinbase?
Oh God, that's a hard one. Actually, I'm going to go Coinbase on that one. Maybe it's not so hard. The MSTR, the main issue there is that premium to NAV on the underlying Bitcoin.
Yep.
And I haven't checked it. Recently got as high as 50%. By the way, when it gets to that level, what do? They start issuing convertible notes.
Yep.
And then they go buy Bitcoin with that. And they'll keep doing that so long as that spread is there.
Yep.
That's another conveyor belt that helps create a bid for Bitcoin, by the way. It's really funny, right? That premium to NAV is a bid for Bitcoin.
It's a safer one, though, than what the bad actors from last cycle did, in theory, right?
Yeah, it's not. Look, the MicroStrategy has the right financing arrangements in place. So they don't get a margin call on it.
Yeah.
Which is not the case for the last cycle.
Yeah.
Right. I think Coinbase will beat earnings, beat expectations. The analysts are wrong again. They were wrong. They're always wrong. What they're missing is base. Base is a big deal. Base is a way for a centralized company like Coinbase to offer a technology that is composable, that others can build around and access real world services that Coinbase can provide. Maybe money transfer, maybe KYC in the future if they need to do that. It's really interesting what they're doing there. Obviously, like FriendTech is built on Base. Base, of course, is built on like Optimism. It's an interesting component there. It's still early. Like Coinbase isn't trying to harvest the economics on that. They're trying to invest and grow that ecosystem. But you know, it helps to have real world actors do stuff, right? Imagine trying to get a governance proposal through a DAO. It's hard sometimes. Like if you're like in the MakerDAO Discord channel trying to get something approved, it's incredibly difficult. Coinbase can make decisions, move things quickly. So I think that's one to watch.
They custody a lot of ETFs too. I mean, they custody, I think, 8 out of the 11 ETFs, the Bitcoin for those ETFs. That's probably a factor, right?
The margins there are going to be low, though. The main driver is the trading, retail trading especially. So what we saw in Q4 of last year is on Robinhood and Coinbase, retail trading exploded. And the money that Coinbase makes on that is a lot. That's the driver. It's not the custody ETFs. In fact, custody ETFs, the margins are just low. It's not an interesting business. The thing for Coinbase is going to be, if you look at the analyst estimates for 2025, the median estimate is like zero revenue growth. So the question is, how long does this cycle last? Right? Because Coinbase is driven by that trading activity, retail and institutionals. It's almost 50-50 split.
I mean, look, very interesting. I find Coinbase and MicroStrategy fascinating. I find that MicroStrategy is outperforming Coinbase over the last, call it 8 to 12 weeks. The moves up in MicroStrategy's price have been absolutely explosive. People like Mike Alford have tweeted, "I did not expect this thing to be near $2,000 this fast." It was trading at like $1,800, $1,900. He also said in a tweet that he expects it to go to $5,000 next year, which is pretty nuts. On this show, we've talked about Coinbase going north of $500. It's been a very pleasant surprise to see how the price action of those stocks has kind of gone down. Last question, Rob. If you had to make a bet, do you think Bitcoin goes above $200,000 this cycle?
Oh, God. Dude, Pio, you're killing me, man.
This is a price prediction question. You do not have to answer it.
I don't do price prediction. Here's why.
Okay.
I think the question to ask is, I don't think anyone can really do price predictions. I don't think anyone really can. Like, where does that number come from? There's no DCF analysis.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Yeah.
So I think a better question to ask is higher, lower, and higher a lot or lower a lot? Up or down, a lot or a little? That's a simple way to think about stuff, right?
And you brought this up in person one time when you were talking about NVIDIA. How about this? This is a better way for me to ask a question that's not the same but similar. If you look at the performance of NVIDIA over 6 years, it's outperformed Bitcoin, which is wild, in my opinion. A single publicly traded company is outperforming the new money technology network, the leader in crypto, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Is it possible for that to continue over the next 5 years?
It is, because of data center spend. Data centers are needed yesterday, and you have governments spending on them. Governments are the biggest budgets in the world, and many governments. It's an arms race. It literally is an arm, like a defense. Think of it in terms of defense and surveillance and technology and IP and national security and technology. I mean, it's all AI, and governments are FOMOing into data center spend, and NVIDIA is indexed to data center. They have a data center business that's doing like $18+ billion and growing dramatically. So that trend is intact. That trend is not going to stop. Then you got big tech companies, which also cash rich, and they are in an arm. They got to compete to be in the pole position, because the number one winner gets the spoils. The number two gets a decent share. Number three gets nothing in technology. It's mostly, most markets are winner take all.
Or winner take most, right?
Winner take most, correct. So if you're number three, this is why Google, Meta, Apple, Microsoft, I mean, they are going to throw so much money at this, and this means like NVIDIA Blackwell system, because the ROI is higher and the cost of going cheap and losing the race is too much of a big deal. Look what happened to Apple. Like when Apple's stock price tanked, you know, they can't afford that scenario to happen because then your market cap declines. They can't take, it's better for them to invest and take a shot at having the best AI system, which means investing in these, you know, in the GPU and the compute and the data center. The data center trend is intact for quite a while, like years. It takes years to build that data center. It could take years to get the energy to supply the data center.
I love it, Ram. Well, look, we always love having you on the show. Your takes are just unreal. So people should follow you on Twitter. So I've said this on the show before when we've had John in the past, it is a crime that you have 35,000 Twitter followers. You should have 400,000, because I look at your analysis compared to people that have 400,000 followers, and there's just yours is better. So it doesn't make any sense. So everyone should give you a follow. It's at Ram Ahluwalia, at RamAhl. Of course, UWALIA. You're the CEO of Lumita Wealth. They should also look out for your new podcast coming out with James Safer, Joe McCann, and I believe one other co-host on Laura Shin's network. That's Bits and Bips. Is that correct?
You got it. Bits and Bips is coming soon. We've also got content now on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. If you look up Lumida, L-U-M-I-D-A, we're taking short clips from the best, from interviews with content that we track. Content that we create and other podcasts that we think have great insight. So take a look, you can follow there as well.
That's thanks awesome. And let's get that one more time, Ram, because I want to make sure I follow that too.
If you look up Lumida, L-U-M, M as in Mary, I-D-A, Lumida, you'll find it on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, you know, we're publishing content there and, you know, just interviewing really terrific people, including Ron Semiconductor's, you know, leading semiconductor analysts. We're interviewing some of the leading Bitcoin miner analysts coming soon too. We're having fun. It's been great. And thank you. It's always a pleasure. Really enjoy it, Theo. Thank you. And, you know, Nick is our most important client. So whenever Nick needs me, I'm here to deliver. So
he's got the biggest bankroll, Ram.
He's got the biggest bankroll. And, you know, we're here to serve. I want to make sure we manage his very complex estate as effectively and prudently as we can.
Well, we appreciate you managing Nick's wealth, Ram. Everybody give Ram a follow. Ram, thanks for coming on the show. We'll catch you again in the future. Have a good one, man.
Take care. Be well now. Bye-bye.
You too. Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. We do the show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. We normally don't go this long, but when we have a kick-ass guest like Ram, we want to make sure that we make the most of it. We'll be back tomorrow. Show's available on Apple and Spotify podcasts, YouTube, X platform video, wherever you get your content. We appreciate you all listening. We will be back tomorrow with another episode of The Daily Bump.